Well, hello and welcome. My name is Trey Lubber, and this is another episode of Undone Redone. I'm here with my gorgeous bride, Melody.
Hello.
We are coming out of last week's episode on abstinence, and today I kind of, in that same vein, talking about some other fun stuff. But and a lot's been going on at our house. We've got some really neat things happening. And one of the things that I wanted to mention is we have a great opportunity coming up March the 8th through the 10th. We'll be doing a marriage seminar called Perfectly Imperfect Marriage, Removing Masks for Lasting Intimacy. And we're going to be down in Columbus, Georgia at a church called My Church. That's not our church. The name of the church is My Church, which can be a little bit confusing. But at my church, a young church down there, we're going to get the opportunity just to really unpack some of our story. We'll be sharing that on Sunday morning. But during the seminar, really going into what makes for lasting intimacy. And part of that's really knowing ourselves. And then once we do, leading into some real engaging communication from that. So we're very excited about that. Last week talked about abstinence. Today, episode 5, we're starting a conversation about talking to our kids about sex. And one of the things we thought as we got into this is that really, you know, we're going to be getting into all the details of here's the practical, here's some age appropriate things maybe to say. But before that, we thought, you know, why is it such a problem? And really kind of diving into kind of the landscape with the church, because it really is one of those places where many parents are not talking about sex, and especially many Christian parents aren't talking about it. And so there's this huge vacuum that's been created there. So, Mel, I mean, both of us grew up in the church. What was your experience growing up, I guess just maybe at home and at church, kind of the conversation about sex, and what did you pick up based on what you were hearing?
Pretty much, I think growing up, as far as the church was concerned, it was fairly silent on the subject. I was in church all the time, Shocker. Involved in a youth group, but again, I knew of the people that were having sex before marriage, but it wasn't that it was communicated about in church at all. And I think so many times what is communicated is just, again, I know we talked about this a little bit last week, is weight. You know, when you ask, I know a number of people I asked over the course of the last couple of days, just, you know, what's one thing that you wish that your parents talked to you about? What's one thing that you wish the church talked about? And, you know, I've kind of got this resounding abstinence and be a virgin and wait and all that kind of stuff. Well, that's not really that's a cookie crumb piece of having a conversation with your kids about sex. That's just a small piece of that. Sure. There's so many more pieces of that. But I think at home now, again, I grew up in an environment where my parents said that you can ask anything. And so there were some conversations about that. Mm-hmm. And so that did make me a little bit more comfortable moving into that, because the reality is, you know, if my goal is abstinence and my goal is being a virgin when I marry, but it's no, and all these rules and all that, then my honeymoon night, all of a sudden I'm supposed to flip the switch and it's all good and beautiful and all that. I think there's some real mixed messages there.
Sure. And growing up for me, as I've shared in some past episodes, I was exposed to pornography at age 8, mm-hmm. Which had a profound impact on me. But never any healthy dialogue, really any dialogue, healthy or otherwise, about sex in my home. So there was this vacuum. The church was very, very silent, and I think for the most part still is. Mm-hmm. And so I think you're absolutely right. You know, talking about, you know, yes, abstinence is very important, as we covered in last episode. But let's keep that dialogue going beyond that. What is our goal, really, for the godly sexuality for our kids? And I think just really casting a vision of what that looks like. And I think if you look at where the church has been historically, if there's been a parent or a church leader who's really thought about that, which many maybe have not, you know, what's my goal as a pastor or as a youth minister for the godly sexuality of those that I'm ministering to? Many haven't thought about it. Maybe for those who have, the answer most likely would come back when they get to the altar to be married, mm-hmm. to be a virgin.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a very good goal. But I would submit that we need to think broader than that, that our vision needs to be bigger than that.
Right. I know one of the things, as we've communicated in our home, that it's not, again, it's abstinence is very important part of that, but that really, and it's not just, I want to be a virgin when I get married, but it's a gift.
Yeah.
It's a gift. And I know we talked about this last week. It's a gift that I get to give mm-hmm. to the other person that has waited for me.
That's
in the
right.
context of marriage. And again, even going further than that, that sex is a beautiful and a wonderful gift between two married people.
Yeah.
You know, I think the more we can talk about the healthy sexuality and the beauty of it and how God created our bodies and just all that part of it, it makes, again, it's almost like, you know, I look back to the Garden of Eden and Adam and Eve were without shame and they were not clothed. And I look at that a lot of times the same way, that we can begin that conversation with our mm-hmm. kids and pick it up again and again and again. And there is no shame around that
yeah.
because they can talk about it as well with us.
Yeah. And instead of what you just described often being the response when it comes to talking about sex or mm-hmm. anything sexual, often it's just the opposite. It's very tempting for parents who want their kids to arrive at the altar as a virgin. That's their goal.
Mm-hmm.
And we want them to stay away from sex until they get married.
Mm-hmm.
So the path that many parents take, if they are talking about it, is sex is bad, it's dirty,
right.
it's to be avoided, and all these negative messages about sex in order to encourage their child to stay away from it, to avoid it, in order to arrive at the altar. But what happens then at the altar is it's almost like we believe, I guess, then that some magical switch flips. And now after the last dance at the reception, and they're riding off in the decorated just married car to their mm-hmm. honeymoon destination, that somehow after years and years and years of this message that sex is bad, sex is to be avoided, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, stay away, and even maybe more blatant shame,
mm-hmm.
now all of a sudden we're supposed to enjoy it. Now all of a sudden we're supposed to just relish in this gift that God has given. And it's not that way. You and I, you know, work with many, many couples that this is a major,
yes.
major point of contention in their relationship.
Well, and I think just, you know, stepping back about that, you know, I know there's probably a lot of fear in having that conversation with your kids too. Are they going to ask me what I did, you know?
Yeah.
But I think more importantly, am I coming from the position that this is even something I enjoy in marriage?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how can you talk about something beautiful and something lovely and again, a gift that we continue to give each other in the context of marriage? How can I talk about this if I don't even enjoy it myself?
Sure.
And how can I relay the message to my children that this is a wonderful, beautiful thing?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like all the rules plus what society says sex is, plus no affection and no signs of that my parents enjoy this
mm-hmm.
is not going to be a recipe for success when I do get married.
Sure.
You know, what motivates me to even want this down the road myself?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's, I've read something that a theologian said about sex, and it really, I think, puts this into a different context. Christopher West, theologian, says, "If the body and sex are meant to proclaim our union with God, and if there is an enemy who wants to separate us from God, what do you think he's going to attack? If we want to know what is most sacred in this world, all we need to do is to look at what is most violently profaned."
Hmm.
And I think definitely we can look at the realm of sexuality and truly can say that is the battleground.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, what's happened is because the enemy has taken so much ground, that today the church finds itself on the defensive.
Right.
Christian circles, we're on the defensive, on the outside looking in, talking about sex and sexuality because the enemy has so taken this ground. So
mm-hmm.
the big thing we want to get across is that there is a battle. And unfortunately, and that's why this silence is so deafening
right.
in our homes and in the church. Because if the battle is raging, and it is, and we're not even talking about it,
right.
we've lost before we've even started.
That's
and
right.
our kids have no chance in our sex-saturated culture with so many sexually explicit messages coming at them daily, that if we're not at least curbing the tide with the truth as God has designed sex, then our kids really, really don't have much of a chance. Michael Cusick, who wrote a great book, Surfing for God, and we mm-hmm. hope to have Michael on the show hopefully pretty soon. He frames it this way, talking about that battle. He says, sexuality is an intense battle because it is the arena where God desires to demonstrate who He is and what He's like. Through sexual intercourse, God desires to demonstrate what communion with Him is meant to be. It's the taste of the intimacy we crave.
Mm-hmm.
That's that beautiful picture that you were referring to mm-hmm. Earlier. That's what God designed it. And how, as a church, we strip it of that beauty and the mystery and all the excitement that is entailed and how Mr. Cusick defines that, when we just strip it down to a bunch of rules, when we just basically communicate to our kids, don't do it, stop, stay away. You know, again, we just want to get you to the altar when you're mm-hmm. As a virgin when you're married. So having read these two quotes by the theologian Christopher West and also Michael Cusick, surely we can begin to see that there's that our vision for the godly sexuality of our kids needs to be expanded, that we need to have a much loftier goal mm-hmm. than simply getting them to the altar as a virgin when they get married, and to equip them and really educate them on what a gift this really is.
Well, I think just looking, you know, asking yourself, what is it I believe? And mm-hmm. then again, not only what is it I believe, what am I communicating to my children that they may come up with what they think sexuality is just based on how I am leading by an example? You
That's
know,
right.
am I communicating that sex between a husband and a wife is a beautiful thing?
Yeah.
Or do they see mom sleeping in one bedroom at night or dad sleeping in another bedroom at night? There's absolutely no affection. And so basically, sex looks like two people in marriage completely miserable with one another.
Yeah.
I mean, really, I think to be able to ask yourself that question, and if it's not a good thing, that doesn't mean that you can't teach that it's a good thing. There's plenty of good books out there that communicate healthy sexuality and what it is, and that it is beautiful and it mm-hmm. is a gift.
Yeah, and I think that's another byproduct of the silence of the church, is so
Absolutely.
Many people don't feel like they have permission to enjoy sex.
Mm-hmm.
It's at best, maybe if they're having it, they're tolerating it in their marriage. And certainly, it's such a beautiful gift. It's not just to be tolerated, but mm-hmm. truly enjoyed between two people and in the context of marriage. And just like we talked about in our episode on abstinence, this is a precious gift, and that's why there's boundaries around it. But within those boundaries, that we do need to enjoy this and really to explore this, and even maybe in some places that we weren't taught. Maybe there's someone listening, and you relate maybe to my story that nobody really talked about sex and sexuality. I've heard many men in our ministry say, well, my parents just gave me a book. Or one guy even said, I arrived in my bedroom one evening and there was a book on my bed. There wasn't a note to read it.
That's right.
There wasn't a note not to read it. There wasn't any marked chapters to read. It was just, I guess, assumed that he needed to read this book.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's such a common refrain in homes and people who grew up either not having any conversation or basically defaulting to a book or some resource to give them that information.
Can we say cop out?
Absolutely. It is. But let's give some parents some mm-hmm, slack mm-hmm. because most often our parents didn't have that conversation with their parents. And so they weren't really, it wasn't modeled for them
right.
how to do it. And it's very hard to do. So they copped out, many of them, and didn't do it at all. And so now we have this generational thing going where no one is really stepping in. And frankly, where we are today is that our kids are teaching kids about
exactly.
sex and sexuality.
Remember last week we talked about, you know, you can Google anything.
Yeah.
So the internet is happy to teach your child about sex and sexuality, or school can teach your kids about sex or sexuality. And I think sometimes you know, and we'll talk about some of the practicals or the how-tos or whatever, but it's not this everybody sit down and, you know, have this kumbaya circle or whatever. It can be a conversation taking place as you're cooking in the kitchen, just, just bringing something up and seeing how your child communicates with you. I mean, they may roll their eyes or, oh, mom, or whatever, but you're still continuing to keep a conversation going.
Yeah. And you use the word conversation. I think it's really important to bring that
it's
out,
not a
that
talk.
We're not talking about a talk.
Right.
And for those parents maybe who did do something, it was usually our parents' generation was in the context of a talk.
Right.
It was a one-time event.
We've had the talk.
We've had the talk. It's done. Check that off the box. And maybe, say, if you're 13, when that happens, you know, do we really feel like that talk prepared them
right.
for everything that they're going to experience or need to know to really enjoy this gift that, as we've talked about? So it's a conversation, as you mentioned. It's an ongoing conversation, and we'll talk about in a follow-up episode about how to do that, maybe even some age-appropriate things to begin to have those conversations. But it is ongoing, and here's the other thing, parents. It's never going to probably be a planned conversation. We have to be able to take advantage of things that come out of left field. It's usually probably if you're a mom on the way back from some type of soccer practice or something, it may be something coming from the back seat that you aren't prepared for. So rarely do we have this opportunity, but that's the talk provides that.
Right.
With the talk, we can plan it, we can have a sit down, and we can have the talk, and that may be important. Maybe the talk is part of this with some of that instruction, but we also have got to have this ongoing conversation where we're prepared and we're ready to have these conversations about this subject.
Well, and two things I was just thinking about, you know, for the youth leader that might be listening out there, or any church minister, I think, and I disciple 11th grade girls, so I think sometimes the thought is, well, I better not shed too much light on this because I sure don't want to step on the toes of the parents out there. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a parent, but I'm also a youth leader. And so as those questions have come to me, I try to shed as much light as I can on that, and then always remind my girls, go ask your parents about that. That's a great question, and I'll touch on it and that type of thing. But always go back and ask your parents about that, and you know, get the final word from them. That way, I am not stepping in, taking the place of what those parents are going to talk about, but I can come alongside them and point them in the right direction. And again, always bring it back to really what the scriptures say, that it is a beautiful thing and that God created it and all that. Speaking of, Trey, kind of the lineage of Jesus, we were talking about that, you know, a few minutes ago, of just that it's not an accident that, you know, that we can look at that as well.
Absolutely. I mean, Matthew 1, I love that. It's one of the most, one of the passages of scripture that encourages me the most. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I used to bypass it because it was the bunch of begats, the so-and-so begat, so-and-so begat, so-and-so. Mm-hmm. But when I really began to look at the lineage of Jesus recorded in Matthew 1, it is scandal upon scandal upon scandal. Mm-hmm. And as this grace awakening in my own life began to happen, because for so long, and this may be where so many parents are when it comes to this topic of sex and sexuality, I thought life was supposed to be clean and neat. It's black and white, clean and neat, and it was my job to keep it that way.
That's right.
And the more I've lived and the more I have really allowed God to take me deeper into my own story, I realize that it's messy. And now scripture, I can see so many of those stories that used to not really make sense because I was looking at it through this lens that everything's got to be clean and neat with a nice little moral bow at the end. Mm-hmm. But there's so many stories that aren't like that. And Matthew 1 recounts that for us. You've got Judah and Tamar. If you don't remember that story, you can go to Genesis 38 and see. It's like a soap opera that's the worst soap opera you can imagine, right in the middle of the narrative of Joseph, where literally a daughter-in-law poses as a prostitute and sleeps with her father-in-law. It doesn't get much more scandalous than that. We've got Rahab, who was a prostitute, who hid the spies. She's in the lineage of Jesus. You've got Ruth, who is a Moabitess woman, and the Moabites, that whole people, were very looked down upon and despised by the Jews because they came. It was a people that came out of incest, an incestuous relationship. And then what I really, really love in this, because I spent 30 years of my life trying to cover up scandal, is that when it gets to Solomon, it refers to Solomon as the son of David, but not David and Bathsheba, which Solomon was their son.
Mm-hmm.
But it refers to him as the son of David and the wife of Uriah the Hittite. It's like God said, don't miss the scandal here. Don't try to cover this up. Don't forget what the context is here. And again, that was such a lesson for me, because I did spend so many years trying to cover up anything remotely scandalous. I needed to make it pretty and neat. And God here is bringing perfection into the world in Matthew. And in bringing perfection into the world, he is not afraid to show us the imperfection. Because that's true about all of us, that we all can relate to those things. And so as we frame this conversation, it's messy, because a lot of people don't want to have this conversation. They don't want to celebrate sex and the gift that it is, because of that underlying fear. Maybe many have been thinking about this as we've been talking. If I give them that picture, it's going to be very hard for them not to have it.
Right.
They're going to want to have sex. So there are many parents, maybe that's where they are. So how do we default? Let's just come down hard and let's just talk about it in these terms rather than the beautiful gift that it really is.
When I think, too, just look at all the different women in the New Testament time that Jesus rubbed shoulders with. I mean, he had a prostitute wash his feet. I mean, there's the woman at the well. There was many opportunities or many moments throughout the New Testament where Jesus is in the same room with prostitutes. And I think, you know, just kind of stepping out of that and looking at that, you know, sexuality, healthy sexuality as well as unhealthy sexuality is going to be a struggle forever, you know, past, present, and future. And I think that's just a picture, again, of saying, okay, it's not just today that we realize that we've got a struggle. Even back then, and I don't think it was an accident that he showed us the grace that was extended to those that had blown it. You know, we talked about last week about reclaiming your virginity and that it's never, ever too late.
That's right.
You know, it's teaching our children what our values are as it relates to sexuality. It is abstinence. It is taking those stories out of the Bible and seeing how God redeemed person after person through scriptures. But then it's also reminding our kids that we love them no matter what.
That's right.
And that there is no, you know, final place that they can get to or mess up or screw up, that we're done.
That's right.
You know, that doesn't ever need to be their motivation for healthy sexuality either.
Yeah. Well, that kind of gets back to when our lofty goal about sexuality is simply to get them to the altar as a virgin.
Right.
When someone, let's say, heaven forbid, has already messed that up. And many listening have, or maybe you have children who have. And so if that's our only goal and they've blown it, then it's very easy to say, well, why even bother? You know,
right.
It's like now nothing really applies to me any longer, because I will never be able to meet the standard. And as you mentioned, we kind of introduced this concept of reclaimed virginity last week. But it's about holiness. It's about purity. And it's about not just that we've made a mistake, but I think too, part of this discussion is that we as parents have got to create an environment that is safe for our children.
That's right.
That we become that trusted source for them on these topics, because they have questions. We're going to get into that in our next episode, some of the specifics of that. But we want it to be a safe environment where they can come to us, and that as mom or dad, or hopefully both, that we can be that source of information, that trusted source where they can get that information. So one of the things, you know, it kind of really zeroes in on where the church has been with this, unfortunately, and hopefully we're going to begin more and more talking about this within the context of the church, giving parents permission to talk about it and celebrate it. But a few years ago, I heard about this movement for some of the Christian leaders out there in mainline denominations, and there was this movement, and I haven't heard much about it lately, which is a good thing, but there was this movement to encourage young people to get married earlier.
That's right.
And that just kind of really crystallizes that when our focus is simply on getting to the altar as a virgin, then it makes sense. Less logically, You know, if they wait till they're 30 to get married, then it's going to be harder for that to be accomplished. So let's encourage them to get married earlier. We don't want to give them any more information about sex. We're not going to be talking about sex, but all of a sudden now, just getting them married earlier is going to fix everything.
Right. That's definitely not the answer.
Absolutely.
That's definitely not the answer.
Absolutely. One of the things that when you were talking earlier about the prostitutes and all the different mm-hmm. people that Jesus rubbed shoulders with, I was reminded of our gospel manifesto or our Route 1520 manifesto mm-hmm. On our website. It's at Route 1520, route1520.com/manifesto. Right. And it's a video that we put together a few years ago that really depicts, it's full of quotes from people in our ministry, but also at the very end, it just really it helps unpack scandalous grace. Mm. The mere fact that his lineage, as we talked about in Matthew 1, the people he hung around with. So I encourage people to maybe go and just check that out. It's a real quick 2-minute video.
Well, and let me put something out there to the parents who might be listening. Again, a little bit of information can go a long way. And there mm-hmm. are lots of resources out there if you're not comfortable talking about this with your kids. It could be that you find a really good resource out there that you go through with your child. But don't just hand your child the book. There is a book called A Chicken's Guide to Talking Turkey with Your Kids About Sex. It is a great book. I think is it Dr. Kevin Lehman, Trey?
Yes, Dr. Kevin Lehman. And we'll put this up on our Facebook page as well.
Just simple, simple, simple. And it talks about talking, I mean, as early as kindergarten, about just calling the specific physical parts, their specific physical parts, and not making up little child names for those.
Yes. And we'll get into that in maybe our next episode, more the practical, because we've spent our time today just really laying the foundation for why this is so important, that the church has got to start talking about sex and sexuality.
Don't be silent.
This is a beautiful gift from our Father. It does communicate the union that he desires to have with us. It's a physical depiction of that, the relationship that we get to enjoy with our Creator. And we want listeners to begin to experience that. Well, we're coming to the end of this episode. We are so glad that you have joined us. You'll start sharing with your family and friends about Undone Redone and what this podcast is all about. We are a part of Big Brains Media, bigbrainsmedia.com. There's some incredible shows there on Big Brains that we get the opportunity to be a part of what Big Brains Media is about. Some other great shows there you want to check out as well. To get in touch with us, maybe there's some things that we covered in today's show that you want to maybe share a little bit of your experience or maybe some questions. Here's how you can get in touch with us. Melody is at melody@undoneredone.com. I'm at trailer, T-R-A-Y-L-O-R, at undoneredone.com. As I mentioned earlier, we've got a Facebook page, and we will have that resource that Melody mentioned and maybe some other things as a follow-up to this show up on our Facebook page as well. That's at facebook.com/undoneredone. And we do hope you'll join us there and join the conversation here week to week there.
Mm-hmm.
But also, let me just throw out our ministry site as well. Our ministry is Route 1520, route1520.com.
Mm-hmm.
That is our ministry that deals with addiction and also codependency, and we get men and women into community. We'd love to for you to join what's going on there as well. So we just touched the highlights of this very important topic. But if you are a ministry leader, if you are a parent, hopefully at least, if nothing else, after listening to today's show, you'll begin to expand your thought process as far as your vision of what it looks like, what the godly sexuality mm-hmm. of your child looks like. And hopefully that will go beyond simply getting to the altar as a virgin. That's important. We want that to happen. But hopefully there's going to be so much more that you begin to add to that vision as well. So until next time, I'm Trailer.
And I'm Melody.
And this is Undone Redone.